This is the Actual Fluency Podcast, helping you become a better language learner by providing motivating weekly inspiration, as well as top tips and tricks from expert guests. And now, your host, Chris Broholm.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another Actual Fluency Podcast. This is episode 110, and today I'm really excited to feature Chanel Hancock on the podcast. I've been following Chanel on Facebook for a couple of years, and she's always been super positive and motivational to follow because she is visually impaired and still learns languages. So whenever you're thinking, oh, I can't learn languages, or I'm too old, or I'm this and that, or whatever your excuse, you know, Chanel is out there not being able to read. I'm going to let Chanel just introduce herself in a moment, but, you know, not being able to use books to learn languages with. And as we get into in the interview, that can be, you know, quite a challenge to have to focus on either audio methods or in Braille or other ways of making the learning come across. So I'm really happy to talk to Chanel today, and I hope you enjoy her amazing story. Like when she was telling it, I was just gripping at the edge of my seat because it's actually really, it's a really deep story, if you know what I mean. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I did, and I will see you in the next week's episode. And before we get started, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to my friend Anthony Mativier. He's doing a lot of stuff on how to improve your memory. And if you want the secret to memory improvement, then go to actualfluency.com/secret and you can get a free 2-hour audio recording where he gives you the biggest secret of them all. So without being more mysterious, here is the 110th episode of the Actual Fluency Podcast. Enjoy.
I'm visually impaired, so I have I would be called partial. So on my right side, I can't see anything on the right side of my body. Never could. I have what's called retinopathy of prematurity, which is an eye disease that I was born 3 months premature. I was born in the 6th month. So going into the third trimester, to be honest, and I was born 1 pound, 13 ounces. So they did not know if I was going to live or die. And my mother was going on 17 years old when she gave birth to me. So she only had one kidney. I was lucky to be here. And I had to be in an incubator for like 5 months until I gained 5 pounds. And I was this little itty bitty pea pod that you could fit in the palm of your hand. I kid you not. And they didn't know that I was blind until one day I was crawling and I'm looking at the corner of this table and I just crawl right into it. And I have a dent in my head until this day from it. And my mother took me to go get my eyes checked and they said, well, you know, she has some sight loss. Well, she went and registered me at 2 with the Cleveland Sight Center. And then she found a doctor in Philadelphia that was able to save the sight in my left eye. I had cataracts that had formed. And because they had the patches over my eyes to make sure that my eyes could develop properly. But unfortunately, due to low birth weight and oxygen and all that, they did not develop properly. So one eye I can't see out of at all, unless it's like some light perception. And I mean like flashes of white light every once in a while, and that's it. Like I can't see people, shadows, colors, nothing out of it whatsoever. I call it my pirate eye, as a matter of fact. I joke about it all the time. And in my other eye, I can see people and, you know, cars and animals and infrastructure, and I can still read some print. But it's like picking up a People magazine and reading the word people and then underneath it reading what's underneath that. But the print that's underneath the little ad, the little advertisement, I can't read. So like if it's fine print, like 12 size font, I wouldn't be able to read that. But if you blew something up to like 60, I would be able to read that. So basically, you know, I'm pretty much independent. I have my guide dog. Bono's in his bed right now, speaking of dogs. And I pretty much was a large print reader most of my life. And I didn't learn Braille till I was 8. Because when you're in the education system here in America, they want you to use what you have. So if you have any sight whatsoever, you're going to be using it, regardless if you want to or not. And I learned how to read and write first print before I learned Braille. So,
is it tough to learn? Because I don't know anything about it except the concept. So is it something that's hard to learn Braille? Or?
No. Actually, if you're sighted, you can learn. If you're sighted, you can learn it using your vision. But I wouldn't recommend it because it's like, okay, well, it's a reading and writing system. And I've actually had to correct a few people on the Polyglots page because they assume that it's a language. And I was like, no, it's not a language. It's a system of reading and writing. So...
they just want more languages on their badge, you know.
Oh, yes, yes, I know. And it's like, okay, well, nowadays, you know, if you, Braille is very hard to come by. It's very expensive to produce. So for every print page, which is 80 columns, you cut that in half, that's 2 Braille pages. So if you have a 350-page book, you cut that in half, that's about 700 pages. And that's about 4 or 5 volumes of Braille right there. Like, I actually read The Hobbit in Braille.
Oh, wow.
And it was 459 pages in Braille, but in print it was only 272. So, you know, but that's mostly Braille reading's okay. I mean, it's not... like I'm not like a lot of people I know where they can read like 90 to 100 words a minute, but I get by.
That's super cool.
But it's not. It really isn't that difficult. I think it depends on the person. It usually takes a person a year to learn it. However, you might want to know this one: Braille is in just about every language in the world. So they even have Danish Braille.
Wow.
I just want to let you know that. Yeah. Yes.
Perfect.
And so they have what's called Unified English Braille. And we just adopted that as of last year on January 1, where all of the information is going to be in Unified English Braille, because the 7 countries of the world that are English speaking, the UK, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, Canada, the United States, and Nigeria, they all had their own Braille codes. And so sometimes when you're sending somebody something in print and they want to translate it over into a BRL Braille format, then it's very difficult because of the different symbols and punctuation. So they wanted to make it a lot more easier for people. And as a result of that, they came up with Unified English Braille, which is a combination of grade 2 and grade 1. Grade 1 is the alphabet. Grade 2 is contracted. So like if you wanted to say... the word here, H-E-R-E, you would just do .5H. And if you want to do atmosphere instead of E-R at the end and then P-H, you would just do .5H instead of... They made it a little bit more easier to use contractions inside of words. Before that, you weren't able to because there was a whole bunch of rules and... jargon that really was ridiculous.
Well, that's really interesting to hear that that's being innovated that much, that that's just last year that happened. I thought this was kind of like a system that was developed ages ago and it was kind of like, you know, set to just be whatever it is. And then, but it's really cool that they're working on it.
No, there's so many different, like, because everybody's like, okay, it was developed in France by Louis Braille. However, it's been modified and updated and rechanged like so many times over. It's unreal. So like right now, because I'm still learning Russian after 25 months. I taught myself Russian Braille, and all Russian Braille is the alphabet.
Right.
So, and some punctuation, because they spell everything out. It's phonetic. So they spell everything out. And I thought, well, my next two languages are French and Egyptian Arabic, and they have those codes. So it wouldn't be difficult for me to learn the alphabet, so I would be able to read and write in those languages.
Right.
However, I don't use print that much unless I'm signing my name on the dotted line or I have to write a check with my big print checks or something like that. But aside from that, I don't write essays anymore longhand. I haven't written longhand in about, give or take, about 17 years.
Well, we don't use it much anyway, so, you know.
Well, you know, and it's sad because someone was telling me, we were having this conversation, me and a friend of mine, and she said it's a shame that this generation doesn't even know how to write.
Yeah, it really is. Like, my handwriting is, you know, you can have terrible handwriting, but consistent, like doctor handwriting, you know? And then there's just terrible, you know, like mine is just terrible. It's just all over the place. It changes every single... I could write the same word 10 different times on the same page, or 10 different ways. So it really is a shame. And actually, I did the IB. I don't know if you know what the IB is. It's like a standardized high school exam that's all over the world. And because it had to be the same all over the world, you couldn't be sure that every student had access to a computer. So we had to actually do all the exams in hand after 12 years of schooling with absolutely no handwriting.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, and it's so funny because I remember I grew up in the time where, you know, I didn't have a computer. I didn't own one until 2001 when I started college. And I did everything longhand. Or I had used a typewriter. Like, that was the first thing I learned how to use when I was like 9 years old, was a manual typewriter. Put the paper in.
Yeah.
So, but to be honest, it's sad because if they don't know how to do simple math, if they don't know how to read and write, technology can fail just as quickly as it came into existence. And if we're all wiped out from technology, period, and they don't know how to do simple things.
Yeah.
Ew, we're screwed.
Well, they say you remember better as well. If you they did a study with university notes. If people did it on the computer, they remembered far less than if they did the notes by hand. So there's some brain-hand connection as well that's being completely ignored or made obsolete or something. So.
Oh, yeah, because I know in the blind community, the blindness community, they will teach these kids how to use JAWS and Zoom Text and Magic and Zoom Text. Are two magnifying software programs for people that are low vision. But they would teach them all this stuff, but they won't teach them Braille.
Hmm.
Because, you live in the sighted world, and in the sighted world, you have to do print. Well, guess what? At the end of the day, there's an 80% unemployment rate for the blind in this country. Why? Because they're not equipped to be able to compete with their sighted peers because they don't have access to a refreshable Braille display to hook up to their computer so they can read what's on the screen.
It's true. Yeah.
So because of that, and because, well, their parents can't afford a display that's $1,000 up to like 10 grand. Because it's expensive. Yeah. This stuff takes so long to make. Just the cells by itself is unreal. And so, you know, you have to go through vocational rehabilitation services commission here. And a lot of it now is, okay, employment. We need to get you gainful employment, you know, and is it about what the consumer wants, you know, what type of job they want to be trained for, or is it just because you need to fulfill a quota?
Mm.
And yeah, I mean, it's pretty sad. Like right now, I just got finished getting my certification to teach English as a foreign language, and I did it all online.
Yeah, I saw that. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Good job.
So Thank you. So now I'm looking for, tutoring jobs. I'm actually going to see if I can make a profile on iTalki, and there might be a couple other places I might look at to try to get my foot in the door. So I can make a little bit of money, because my goal is to be able to teach in Russia. So, especially the disabled in Russia, because I've heard of, blind people in Russia that, it's hard for them.
Yeah.
They don't have some of the technology or some of the access to some of the things that we have here in the States. And they don't have this sort of freedom either. They're kind of like protected and sheltered.
Right.
Somewhat, depending on where you live. Now, if you're in Petersburg, you're in Moscow, you might have a little bit more freedom. You can go to school, you can get a job, stuff like that. But I mean, Putin has done more reforms to help the disabled a lot more. Actually, right. as of now, they actually have electronic don't walk signs to indicate when it's time for you to walk or cross the street. We have those here in the States, but it's like your main street crossings. It's not like your side streets, which you know. But aside from that,
We don't have that at all. I mean, luckily we have the sounds at most crossings, but otherwise you would be mostly on your own, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of people, they either use a dog or they use a cane. It's a personal preference. Not everyone is forced to get a guide dog. You actually have to have good traveling skills.
Yeah.
To be able to get a dog in the first place. I mean, and it is a big responsibility. Bono was my first guide dog. And on July 21st, it'll be 3 years since we've been paired. So I'm quite happy with him.
So there's owner training just as well as dog training.
Oh, no. Actually, what happens is that you, after a year of having your dog, because they want to make sure that this is what you want and that you're comfortable. So after you're at whatever school you apply to, I applied to Guide Dogs for the Blind in California, and I went to their Oregon campus because it was their Portland was kind of similar to Cleveland. And so I was there for 2 weeks with him, and we graduated afterwards. And for that whole year, you're bonding with that dog. And so as a result of that, you find out if this is something that you really want to do. I mean, it's like having a kid.
Yeah.
The only difference is that the school pays for his vet care, gives me free heartworm and flea and tick medication for a year. So the only thing I have to pay for is like his toys, his grooming, his dog food, which I get online for little or nothing. And I pretty much groom him at home myself. I put him in the bathtub and give him a bath and comb him out and brush him out. And oh, yeah.
Super.
He's spoiled.
So yeah. Thank you so much for that. That little, this is just an amazing story. I mean, I can't believe that like all that you've been through just from the start of your life. But let's move into sort of a language learning. When did you first begin get the interest or the awareness that, there are other languages than English in the world? And when did you get an appetite for actually learning them also?
Actually, when I was like 5 years old, a friend of mine, she's about 7 years older than me, and we would play together. However, she kind of knew that I had an aptitude to pick up things very quickly. And so she started teaching me American Sign Language, for which I became fluent at that time. And we started signing to each other. But I had moved from New Jersey at the time because I had lived in Jersey for like the first 6 years of my life. And we had moved back to Cleveland, and I went to a school called A.G. Bell, Alexander Graham Bell, from like the second and third grade, if I can remember right. And then I went to like Anthony Wayne, which was right next door, for fourth and fifth. Not Keep It Up. I only remembered so much, so I forgot a lot of it. And then I kind of learned a little bit of Spanish from Sesame Street. So while she says the missionary, and it wasn't until I was at a school called Futures Academy in Buffalo, New York, where I learned some Spanish, and I mean like very little. Like I was in there for a week, and the reason why was because I could not read the blackboard. I couldn't read the print in the book. I had to have a closed caption television to enlarge the print in order to read it. And you can't take that with you down the hallway.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I was mainstreamed, but it was very hard. They thought after me learning Braille, maybe I need to go back to the print because there wasn't anybody around to help me pretty much. So like a teacher's assistant. So I went through, I probably from the time I was 5 up until I was 14, I went to 10 different schools in 5 different states. No, let me take that back. Yeah. 5 different states. No, 6 different states. I'm sorry. So I went to 2 different schools in New Jersey. I went to 1 in New York, Buffalo, New York. I went to Mendenhall Middle School in North Carolina. I went to a school in Tuscaloosa, Alabama for like 5 months, like my 6th grade year. And I finished out my 6th grade year in North Carolina. No, not North Carolina, did I? Let me remember. No, I finished it out in Jersey. And then I started my seventh grade year in Buffalo. Then in the middle of the year, it was Cleveland. And then I finished it off in North Carolina. That's how much we moved around.
Wow.
So, and then the school system had gotten so bad that I was getting bullied every day. To the point where my lunch money was getting stolen. People were taking pencils and putting them in pencil sharpeners and poking me in the back of the neck during English class. All because they didn't like me because I was very well dressed, and I was visually impaired. So, I mean, I got basketballs thrown in my face. I got textbooks hit in the face. Yeah, it was bad. It got to the point where the last day of my 7th grade year, we had a pizza party on our bus, and the kids decided to clean the bus. And so what they did was they took a water hose, turned it on, and sprayed me and the bus driver in the whole bus with it.
Wow.
Yeah, so, yeah, my mother was like, that's enough. Oh, no. Apps never again. Oh, no. So I wound up going to the Ohio State School for the Blind in Columbus from January of 92 to June of 99. And I actually stayed an extra 3 years at the blind school for reasons I'd rather not go into. But I learned a hell of a lot while I was there. I was on the cheerleading squad. I was on the track team. I was editor of my yearbook. I was in 2 different choirs. I was drama. I did drama. We competed all over the country with other blind schools. And I also worked in food service for 3 years and did some work for like Ohio National Food Bank and American Diabetes Association and the YMCA for a year and a half. So I got a lot of work experience along with my education as well. And then I wound up graduating with honors 2 weeks after my mom passed away. So, which was very difficult.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And thank you. But while I was in high school, no languages whatsoever. It wasn't until I got to college in 2000 when I took Spanish. And I didn't want to really take that. I didn't have a choice. Mainly because that was the only language that they were teaching from beginning to end. Like they had French and they had Russian, which I would have gladly have taken. because those were the two languages of choice I really wanted to take ever since I was 13. And I wasn't able to. And because I went to Cuyahoga Community College in Cleveland, and I went to the Eastern campus. And if you wanted to take French, you had to go downtown. If you wanted to take Russian, you had to go on the west side. And I'm like, I'm not traveling all the way over there just for that. Okay. So I took Spanish, and I was very good at it, actually. It was one of those things, and you talk about this on your show all the time, where you learn how to conjugate. You learn how to diagram. You get these large vocabulary lists, but you don't speak.
You're right.
And it's so frustrating. I mean, the most I was able to do was order my food at a Spanish restaurant and maybe curse somebody out. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the culture. I love the dancing. I love the food. I love the music. I still listen to Shakira and Santana and Enrique Iglesias and Ricky Martin and Pitbull and Jennifer Lopez. I love all that. But don't ask me to speak it. I have a very bad confidence problem with speaking it, mainly because I didn't have the support that I needed. And I did it the old-fashioned way. I had a book, a hard print textbook, a Mexican-American woman teaching me, an African-American guy teaching me, and my professors. And I would spend 5 hours a day learning Spanish. I was good at the grammar. I sucked at the vocabulary. And I could actually correct people on, you know, their verb tenses and, oh no, that's the wrong ending. You said this, you were supposed to say that. Right. I can translate it on paper. You read it to me, I can tell you what it said. But I couldn't speak it worth it. And it was bad. I mean, I went as far as to move all the way to California. And, you know, that's like the second capital of, you know, Spanish-speaking country. Sure. And I thought, all right, I can speak now. Nope. They wanted to speak English. And I was like, oh, my God. So, I got a lot of rude comments from people. You need to practice more. You suck. Stop messing up our language.
That's pretty and evil.
I just stopped. Like, literally, I was like, screw this language. This sucks. And it took me, I would say about 12 years to pick up another language. And then I said, you know what, to hell with this, I'm going to pick up the language I want to. And this is when technology started to get better, so I decided to do Russian. And I said, I'm going to find me a podcast, something free to get the basics down. And this is after my college years. I would say it was like March of 2015. I started learning Russian by myself with Russian Made Easy by Mark Thompson, his 30 lesson podcast. And then I went on to do Memories and RussianPod101.com, which I'm friends with Stacy Johnson, one of the customer service people. And I'm always plugging that.
Yeah, I love
that
it
website
too.
To people. All.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it got to the point where I outgrew it. So now I'm using Memories a lot. And I actually finished year 7 and year 6 of Russian on the app. And then I also have the RT channel on my cable subscription. And I watch that religiously, like, all the time. So I'm listening to the news in Russian. I'm listening to President Putin in Russian, like, constantly. And I actually learned a lot of vocabulary just from listening to, like, Radio Roka. I don't know if you've heard of that podcast.
No.
It's out of Moscow. And it's free. And I've done that. And then I did Toik Unas, but for some reason, after a while, it stopped working. So I don't know what happened. But I do that. And then TuneIn Radio. I've done Asimil Russian. I completed the first half of it. Now I'm on the second half. And Yeah, I practice every day. I listen a lot. I do a lot of listening. My writing is not the best. Google Translate's become my new best friend. So if you notice, I've written you in Russian, but what I've done is I write it in English and then I have it translated into Russian to make sure that what I'm saying, you know, comes out better than because my writing is really bad. It's appalling. And, but I'm getting better at, you know, speaking. I've actually ran into a few people and I've just been able to speak spontaneously, to them without any nerves whatsoever. Maybe because I have a passion for it. I'm a big history buff because I studied theater at Kent State, from 2003 to 2006. And so I studied acting and, producing. So therefore I have always been very much a liberal arts type of person, not so much mathematical or science. Oh, I suck at that.
Well, so, me too.
Yeah.
So, what kind of challenges did you have when you started to learn Russian? You said that the technology had gotten better, and like I see you sometimes write posts on the Facebook group. You're asking people for, do you have an audio resource for this or this particular area? Is that the main problem that it's mm-hmm. mostly in written form and not in audio?
Right. And I actually have found a couple of websites that are Russian that you can get audiobooks for like $5 here, three here, two here. But you only can listen to them in that particular app.
Mm.
However, what makes the situation even worse on my end is because everything is in print. They have a lot of resources for, like, if you have Spanish, if you're French or German, Italian, Dutch, Swedish, Chinese, Japanese. Oh, and Korean is really popular now.
Oh, wow.
So if you like Korean pop or K-pop or... Oh,
the food.
Yeah, you're going to be in heaven. Russian? Not so much. Arabic? Yes, that's becoming popular. Swahili, you know, Lao, all these other different languages? Yes. It's becoming, you know, that's more popular. Russian, it is very hard.
Right.
And I'm lucky because evidently I studied theater and film. And so, like, I have Leviathan, I have Alina. But the movie has to be, like, really popular in order for it to be distributed here in the U.S. If it's not popular, you better start looking on the internet somewhere. And because Amazon doesn't really have, like, a lot of... They have Russian titles, but not a lot, you know, because evidently Amazon doesn't really go to Russia.
Right.
And you can't, like, get stuff in Russian unless you switch your keyboard over digitally, type the title you want, and see if they have it in iTunes that you can buy. Like, I just bought Anna Karenina and... War and Peace in Russian, the ebook form, and I can have VoiceOver read it to me, or I can hook up my Braille display and I can read it with my Braille display. So that's one good thing. But when it comes down to if I want to read Harry Potter in Russian,
oh yeah,
or Game of Thrones in Russian. Actually, I did get Game of Thrones. Someone was kind enough to actually send me Game of Thrones in Russian, the first book. In Russian audio, wow. Which was great, but it's very hard. I mean, you guys are lucky. Y'all can find stuff all over the place. and it wouldn't be that difficult because you guys are in Europe.
For sure.
Here, it's
pricey hell. Though. Like if you want to go on and get, let's say, a Russian Harry Potter, for instance, you pay $30 shipping or something, at least where I live. So
what?
Yeah, that's not fun.
Oh my god! So shipping and handling here is like maybe like $5.
Yeah, so there are ups and downs. Like it might be more available here, and it's not as far. But yeah, those shipping rates are really often the killer for me. But of course, you can find maybe an ebook or something. But I always find it's harder to read on the screen instead of the. Like if I have a proper physical
in your
copy.
Hand.
Yeah. What about Netflix? You ever tried Netflix? Because mm-hmm. I don't use it, but I heard from people who say that they have lots of languages and stuff.
They have lots of languages. The problem is that Russian is not like the most popular on the face of the planet. I will tell you Spanish and Chinese and Japanese and Korean. They have a whole site, a whole page of nothing but Korean because people are going crazy for Korean. It's ridiculous. But I think that's kind of cool though.
It is, yeah.
I don't know if I would do Korean.
I mean the barbecue is nice, but I don't know.
Yeah. I am dipping into two more languages, possibly three.
Oh yeah?
French, and I'm also dipping into Egyptian Arabic. I actually volunteer at this nonprofit organization called Project Learn. And they teach people how to they teach them English for free. And you also can get your GED. You also can get to the point where you can apply for your citizenship. And I've been volunteering since September, and we have a lot of different people who have come over from Afghanistan, Iraq, Yemen, Syria, Jordan, Guinea.
Sure.
Someone actually came over from Burma, but they're Karen, and they lived in the jungle because their father was a Karen soldier. So a Karen soldier couldn't live in the city. They had to live out in the middle of the jungle. And she talked about her life and everything in a presentation like this past December. And it was just phenomenal. You know,
so I never heard of any of that before, so it's really exciting for me.
So I help with teaching English to people, and I get to practice a little French and a little bit of Egyptian Arabic, the little I know. And I do use Michelle Thomas. I like it better than Pimsleur. Pimsleur is a little slow.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, you'll be sitting there forever, like, oh my God, will you shut up already?
30 minutes, longest 30 minutes of my life.
Now, I understand, like, people like Ellen Jelvin, which I used to be friends with on Facebook, but not anymore.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, she loves Pimsleur.
Right, yeah.
I fell in love with Aussie Mill. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with Michelle Thomas, and I fell in love with Memories. I hate Duolingo. I didn't like it. I thought it was boring.
Mm.
And it was not challenging enough for me. Of course, you know, when you have a bachelor's degree and two certifications and you're on your third language, your second foreign language, but your third language overall, it's very, it's kind of difficult to... Be like, oh, well, I want to... No, this is boring. Okay.
So weird sentences and stuff.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, you're not going to say this. Now, I mean, I've gotten the questions that everyone get. Why are you learning Russian? I mean, it didn't matter who you were. And I said, because I like it. That was my response. I like it. I love the people, the food, the culture, the politics, the history, the country. And I don't even live there.
Right.
You know, so I said, I want to go to Russia really badly. That is my dream, like, along with backpacking all over Europe. and seeing Denmark and seeing Sweden and Germany and France and in London. And oh yeah, I'm a big history buff and artistic person, and I love the theater and film, and which I studied in college. And so yeah, I pretty much, my whole language journey is I want to communicate with people. I'm like Ollie Richards. I want to talk to people.
Right.
You know, not, okay, I want to copy the entire Bible from Hebrew to English. No.
Right.
Or the Quran, or not the Quran, but the Torah from, no. I no, that's okay.
Yeah. Do you ever have plans of going back to Spanish and sort of getting that last element or piece of the puzzle?
I thought about it. I mean, there's a lot of people that I've met recently where I've spoken to them and they're like, your Spanish isn't that bad. It really isn't. You're not that bad. You know, I think what it is, you had a lot of negativity thrown at you. And I mean, I've talked to other people that feel the same way. They love the culture and the music and all that, but they're just not. And I guess because it was forced on me.
It's not the same.
It's not the same. It's not like I love Russian, I love French. And because I took a world history course in Braille for a year, and it was a distance learning course, I fell in love with the Arabic culture. Mm. And I was like, all right, this is fascinating to me, you know, what they had to go through and everything and historically and what happened to them. And I said, I wouldn't mind learning like Egyptian Arabic, you know, because I found Egypt and in that part of the world to be fascinating. Not to say I would visit anytime soon. It's too crazy over there right now. but I've met people that are really nice, really welcoming. That's another thing I like about the language community. Yes, you have your people who are, I want to learn 30 languages by the time I reach 60. Really? Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
You know, okay, I just want to be able to communicate with people. And I feel that if I could learn something, even if it was to an A2 level, like Richard Simcutt says all the time, even if it was like to an A2 level in a certain language or a B1 level, okay, fine. I mean, I'm not wanting to go up and give a speech on the history of Danish cuisine. I mean, I'm not, right. That's not what I'm doing it for. And plus also to make new friends, and because we live in a very global community and I come from a very multi cultural family. So me being African American, I mean, I have some Native American in me, and then it's the United Nations in my family. Like we have Puerto Rican and Chinese and Irish and German and yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's exciting.
So yeah, so
so you're doing it for the fun of it, basically. The learning.
Right.
Like, whatever
right.
You feel like is interesting and exciting, that's why you do it. You don't do it because you want to tell people that you speak Russian or whatever language.
Right. Right. And I mean, I see that a lot. Like, it's a turnoff to hear people say, well, I speak 15 languages and I want to learn another 25. Are you doing it because you enjoy it? Are you doing it because it's bragging rights?
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, after a while, it becomes a little bit annoying. And I'm like, okay.
Because the people who speak that many languages, like, I mean, I can only think of a few who speak, let's say, more than 20. They will never say a number. They'll just say, like, a lot. Or they'll say, I speak 8 really well. And then they have, like, 22 double language. They will never say, like, you would never hear Richard Simcutt say, I speak 30 languages.
He
would just never say that. And I think that's the clue that if you genuinely speak a lot of languages, you're generally very modest about it. Like, I haven't seen people, like, show off and then actually have the skills to back it up also.
Oh, my God, yes. And it's funny, too, because, okay, like, I have Richard and Anthony Medivier, Anthony Lauder, Ollie Richards and Moses McCormick. I love him to death.
You're close to him, aren't you? I mean, have you talked about visiting him, or you know, both Ohioans?
You know, it's funny because I was actually in Columbus last summer, and I said, "Hey, you want to meet up? I'm in Columbus." But we never got a chance to do that.
Oh, that's a shame.
But I have asked him questions when he's done his live feeds and stuff like that, like when he was in Michigan with his friend. And I would post something in Russian because he actually did a video a while back, and he went to this Russian store in Columbus and was speaking Russian, and I understood everything he said. And I understood everything the guy was saying too. And so I was like, well, that's not too bad, but this is what you might want to do to improve it. and so, like, I mean, and it wasn't that bad. I mean, I give this guy some props though.
Oh yeah.
Who the heck goes and starts speaking Hungarian, Polish, now he's on Armenian, I believe.
Well, he's like done 30 languages or something by now, so who knows what he's speaking this week.
like, it's amazing. Like, he was doing Macedonian. He did Tagalog one week. It was crazy. I was like, my brain would probably be dead trying to...
Yeah. I love that he just does it. I love that he just goes out there and just speaks to people, because that's my biggest weakness, is that I'm a little bit introverted, maybe a little bit more. So I find it very hard to just go out and speak to strangers, mm-hmm. and yet alone in my own language. But what about foreign language, you know? That makes it even harder. Right. So that's what
now,
I really admire.
I will say, I actually go out and do the same thing he does. I was in a cafe not too long ago. It was back in November or October. And I was sitting up there, and my friend was like, are you going to speak some Russian? And then this lady was sitting with her friend, kind of find out she was a Russian teacher.
Ooh.
Like, she was American that taught Russian. And I just went, blah, 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 blah. I was like, Здравствуйте, мне нравится говорить по-русски языке. Очень приятно, как вы? Меня зовут Шанел, и я Акрин. You know, and so I'm waiting, and you're like, oh, your Russian's good. I'm like, oh, spicy babashaya. And she was, I just literally, it was just ridiculous. Like, I got into speaking it that she had to say, can we speak in English? Because it's rude to speak in Russian if they don't understand.
Sure.
And I was just like, really? Because I was so excited.
Yeah.
I don't get to be around a lot of people who speak it.
You were out there getting the XP, you know, leveling up.
Right. And it was just like, but, you know, I mean, I have talked to people that said, well, I don't understand why people would be so offended to speak it. I mean, especially if you're a freaking Russian speaking teacher, my God.
Right.
You know, so, and everybody's like, your Russian is good. Like, I was actually in Florida 2 years ago, and this was when I had just started learning Russian, and I had just gotten to like maybe an A2 level of speaking. And she, this one lady, I guess she had been in America for 50 years. She was blind. And she overheard me saying that I was studying Russian, and she went and she was like, spoke to me in Russian, and I started speaking to her in Russian, and everybody at the table I was with was like, what? You know, because they're used to hearing someone speak Spanish.
Sure.
And, or, you know, some other language. And I'm like, and my best friend was like, wow, that's, wow. And I was like, you know why I speak it so well? Because I practice 365 days a year, honey.
Yeah,
and I don't mind it. I will tell you this. With this language, I have not gotten what's called demotivated at all. Like, I find a new purpose every day to keep going, even if you're talking to yourself. And some people think that's crazy. I was like, no, because you have to speak.
Yeah.
So I kind of imagine that somebody else is in the room, and I'll just start talking. I have a roommate that lives downstairs from me, and she's like, okay, I understand why you're doing this, so I'm not going to even comment. And I was like, well, as long as I'm not responding back to myself,
right,
that's what matters. But I do say, I do stick to the same materials when I'm learning. And I actually found a place where you can actually get like all the Osimil and the Michelle Thomas for like $80 a pop.
Mm. It's a good deal. You can also sometimes find them in a library. I know I saw them in my own local library.
Oh yeah.
So if
oh yeah, that's where I started. I started at the library, and I actually would upload them to my computer and do it that way. But after a while, like there were certain courses that I couldn't get because they didn't have them available. And like I actually really want to learn Dutch.
Oh yeah.
Mainly because I want to watch Dutch cinema. And I find that to be interesting. And it's kind of funny because I can actually understand some of it.
Right. It's given very the fact similar. That
it, yeah. And I can actually understand German, but don't ask me to speak German. All I right. don't know that much German.
Yeah, me neither.
I tried to learn it. Tough. And I'm sitting here like, German is extremely guttural.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did try it with Michelle Thomas. But then I was just like, oh, that's no. Okay, when am I actually going to use this? I mean, the only reason I would learn it is because I would like to read Goethe. Mm-hmm. And I would like to understand the Rammstein CDs I have in my collection. Sure. That's pretty much it. Like,
you're not feeling it, then you're not doing it, which I think
right,
makes
exactly.
perfect sense.
And, right, and I mean, I believe personally that if there is a language out there, because I've given people really good advice on, don't listen to everybody and what they say. If they say you suck, don't believe it, because guess what? There is a purpose for why you're learning whatever you're learning. And if it makes you happy every day, and that's the first thing you think about when you wake up in the morning, and that's the last thing you think about when you go to bed at night, there is a reason for it. And I said, you know, this is like the second time third time I've changed like career paths, just because my real goal, aside from teaching English as a foreign language to get started, I would love to be a simultaneous interpreter in Russian for the UN. And I'm going on 40 years old this year. So it's like, I look at it like this, life is too short not to accomplish what you want in life. I mean, I've lived in LA. I've lived in Hollywood for 13 months. And that was fun. I've gone to Disneyland and Disney World. I've been as far as Toronto and as far as Oregon and in between there, except for Europe. And I would love to do that at some point when I can afford it.
Sure.
Just like I would like to go to the Polyglot Conference.
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's expensive. It's like,
it is, yeah. Going across the pond is... Ooh. It's really pricey.
Yeah, and I know that they're having it in Slovenia, right?
Slovakia, year? Yeah, the gathering.
Slovakia, yeah. Yeah, and so I hope that they actually... what I wish they could do with that is, like, kind of, like, stream it.
Mm, yeah.
So people can listen to it, because whoever can't make it, they can still listen.
Yeah, they should have something.
That would be... That would be kind of a cool thing to do. I think that would be an awesome thing.
I know they did that a little bit in Canada for the Montreal Language Festival. I know they tried to stream a little bit last year, but obviously this is the first time right. they tried it, so the technology was a little bit questionable. But
yeah, because
it was recording.
I found it, and I did listen to your speech on depression, and I found that to be very inspirational. Like, I can relate to that. I mean, because there's been plenty of times when I was actually helping my aunt take care of my grandparents for like 6 years after I got back from California. And it was very depressing because I didn't know what my life was going to be like after, you know, one of my grandparents, my grandfather died after a long battle of double cancer, and he was a double war vet. So it was very hard. And what helped me was that I started learning languages.
Right.
And starting to become accepted in a community where you know, everybody else liked the same thing too. And I mean, yes, I did have a few people at first that couldn't understand why is it that a visually impaired person wants to learn. Well, guess what? We learn the same way. You learn the same way as you did when you first learned your first language. How did you learn? You learned from osmosis. You learned from listening and repeating.
Yeah, you couldn't what read back said. Then. Anyway.
Right, exactly, exactly. So not everything is about the reading aspect. You will get there, but you have to learn how to speak and be able to express, I want, I do, I run, I...
I think speaking is the most important anyway. Like, for me, if you told me you could have perfect understanding in a language but not speak it, or speak it kind of badly but, you know, just speak it, I'd take speaking all day because that's what it's all about. Right. It's about communication. It's not a, you know, some people learn for different reasons. Of course, like you said, translating the Bible or whatever. I can understand those reasons also. But for me, it's just about speaking and understanding and the joy of, you know, seeing people's expressions and the feeling of, you know, some time ago I didn't know this language and now I can actually converse in it.
Right. And I mean, it was funny because when I told people I was getting certified to teach, the first thing they said was, Russian? I was like, no, not yet. Actually, I do have a secondary backup dream is to get my master's in Russian.
Yeah, that would be easy for you, I'm sure.
Unfortunately, I want to get it to where I, you know, how there are some people, some places in the world where you can actually go to school for free.
Yeah,
if like you learn Denmark. Their language.
My country.
So, yeah, so I said, wait, you actually can go to school in Denmark for free if you learn Danish?
Well, I mean, it depends on what country you're from and how the mutual... Like, it depends if your state or your country is willing to take a Danish person in exchange, then you could possibly do it. But certainly for Danish residents, everything is free, yeah. But
That's freaking awesome. I know you were like, oh, thank God, I don't have to worry about paying my student loans back.
Well, we actually still somehow end up with student loans, and it's probably mostly on beer and coffee, but you know what?
My student loans was on room and board, and I was able through because of President Obama, thank God. If you're disabled or hardship, you can't afford to pay your loans. I mean, I was able to put like $1,500 down the entire time, and that's being on disability. So as a result of that, I applied to get my student loans forgiven by the federal government. And I was able to get the $30,000 paid off. And now I don't have any student loans to worry about. But I said I still would like to go and get my master's at some point. I mean, because you're never too old. And that's another thing I hear. I'm too old to learn a language. No, you're not.
Right.
There are 80-year-olds learning like Hungarian.
Yeah.
I mean, for real, like, that is a terrible way to think. You're too old to do this. Well, why? Because society says so? I don't think so.
But it's not even about age. That's the funny thing. It's like people are, you know, 27. They're like, oh, I'm too old. I should have learned it when I was 7. I'm like, yeah, that might have been better, but the second best time is now, you know?
Right, exactly, because if you don't do it now, you'll never do it.
Right.
Like, you'll still continue to procrastinate. And, I mean, trust me, I've been studying Russian since 2015, and it's one of those things where I can sit there right now, turn my TV off of mute, turn it to 3,882, which is the Russian TV channel, and just sit. I'm serious. I will sit there. And my roommate would walk in, okay, so what's Coon talk about today? So I was like, well, pretty much the same thing. Well, not the same thing. I mean, they're talking about what's going on in Syria right now. But aside from that, I mean, and I'm actually starting to understand the news after, you know, doing the memories courses and continue to listen. And it... I probably listen to the news more than I do listen to the radio.
Do you think that's like the osmosis effect, or do you think that because you're slowly improving your vocabulary as you go along, you actually start to hear the words in context more? Well, right. How do you perceive that?
I really do start to hear things. I had that Eureka moment a couple times where I was listening, for example, to a YouTube video about this English guy that was married to this Russian woman, and they were having this conversation about him speaking Russian. And so they kept asking him, like, what nationality was he? And he was like, Uncle Chonkin. And then da, da, da. And I'm like, and I mean, like, I don't know what happened, but it was like the middle of the night. And I just started, it just clicked in my head. And I started listening and hearing their responses, the mother and the daughter. And I was just roaring because it was so funny what their response. And I actually understood it. It wasn't like it was every other word. It was clear as day. And I probably had that happen 3 times so far. So I was like, oh, this is working.
Yeah. It's a really cool feeling, isn't it?
Yes. And it is. I mean, like, literally, I had to post that on Facebook. I just understood this, you know. And I mean, like, I have Luca Lamparello and Alex Rollins and them on my Facebook. So, I've listening to him speak Russian. Oh my god!
Holy crap! Yeah,
like,
Luca is,
actually amazing.
Both of them, right? Both of them are geniuses at it.
I'm just like, and he was like, I usually would spend 2 years at a time on one language. I was like, well, that makes sense. I mean, I love Benny Lewis. I followed. He was one of the first people. I actually read his audiobook, and it was interesting. I'll follow him on YouTube and everything, and saw pictures of him and Lauren's wedding, and it was beautiful. And I followed her language learning journey. I just didn't know if she continued with the Russian or not. But she was pretty good after, like, 6 weeks.
Yeah, the Benny Lewis technique really worked, didn't it?
Yeah, and I actually wouldn't mind getting his French hacking. But I do have to say, listening to stuff in smaller increments is a very good idea, especially if it's 30 minutes at a time, because anything aside from that, you're not going to remember it.
Right.
It's just going to go through one ear and out the other. And so, I mean, even when I give people advice or I'm tutoring them, you know, on Facebook, I'll sit there and say, listen, just continue to listen and listen for 30 minutes. And then stop, because you're not going to remember what you just learned if you're trying to cram it all in 5 hours. It's not going to happen.
Right.
Not like that. And yes, it is true. The more languages you know, the easier it is to pick it up. But my thing is, okay, once again, if you want, what's the next language you're going to spend the next year or two wanting to learn? I mean, if you want to learn 10 languages in 10 years, that's great. But at what level?
Yeah, that would be quite basic, I imagine.
Yeah. Do you want an A2 level? Do you just want conversation in all of them? Do you want a B1 level? Okay, well, guess what? You probably could get to a B1 level in a year. That's feasible.
Yeah.
But in it, like, 90 days?
That's tough.
I don't know. I don't know how realistic that would really be. I mean, I could see in 90 days you can get to an A2 level.
Yeah, probably.
I can see. I could see that. If you practice for an hour every day, five days a week, you took the weekend off because you need to relax your brain.
Sure.
Then you could do it.
Yeah.
But I cannot see someone wanting to get to a B1 level in 90 days.
No,
that is too intense. Like, literally, you would have to have no life.
Yeah, but that's exactly what Benny does during his challenges, which is a little bit misleading. But, you know, when he does those 3-month challenges where he does get to a pretty high level, he would be working 8 hours a day, like a full-time job on the language from morning till evening. And that, you know, first of all, most people can't do that at all. But even if you could, then you can't do it anyway because it takes so much energy and motivation to actually work on the same language for 8 hours.
I can tell you what's feasible. I did 27 months of Spanish, and I was at a B2 level going to a C1 in 27 months. That's feasible.
Yeah.
Because you're doing 4 months, one level, 4 months, the next level. You might take off some time, and then you're doing, especially because here in the States, when we go to college, 4 years, of course, it's semesters, which is 16 weeks. And then, you know, you have your semester, your midterm in the middle, and then you have your final. And 90% of it was, oh, let's go to a restaurant and order some food.
Yeah.
While our professor gets drunk off of cognac.
Yeah, so, some of those schools are just not efficient.
Well, I will say this, though. It did set me up for knowing how to properly learn the language in a way. But I will say on the speaking side of it, not so much. I mean, I actually went and took from the Hadley School for the Blind, which is a correspondence school out of Illinois. And you can get your GED from, you know, high school diploma. You can take all kinds of like courses in either audio format, Braille, or large print. And so I took 2 conversational Spanish courses because I hadn't taken Spanish in like 12 years. And this is before I decided to do the Russian. I did it in 9 weeks, both courses. And I got an 89, a B+. And the teacher said, first of all, I've never seen anybody get that high of a score on 2 courses and finish my courses in under 10 weeks. You need to study more languages. You were really good.
Oh, wow.
And then she said, you took Spanish before, didn't you? I was like, yes, I took it for 27 months in college. I was like, I mean, I didn't forget a lot of it, but it was...
It's like it's different knowledge in a way. Like, you see people get out of universities and they have this very bookish kind of... Like, they're very good at vocabulary and grammar rules, but combining them into actual spoken language seems to be lacking.
Right. It's real. And it's bad because it's like, okay, well, where are you going to utilize this? Okay. In America, they want you to be as well-rounded as possible. So you're kind of forced to take a whole bunch of classes that you wouldn't normally need to take just to... you know, suffice degree requirements and whatever. I mean, because I started out originally as a poli-sci major, and then I decided I didn't feel like saving the world from its ultimate destruction. So I decided to go into theater because I could do a variety of different things with a theater degree than theater. So I did that, and I'm very artistic, so I like to express myself. And like, for instance, I took one of those career assessment tests just to see where I would place career-wise. And it was so dead on. It was like, oh, well, you know, you can be an interpreter. You can be a drama therapist. You can be a psychologist or, you know, social worker or a teacher or go into government or journalism or something. I was like, okay, so I'm mostly liberal arts. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
I can live with that. I mean, I'm not the best at math and I'm not the best at science. I'm average, so I'm happy to be able to balance my checkbook.
That's wonderful. And you know, I think you're doing a great job, like unbelievable great job actually. And
yeah,
I know you can make it a really as far as you want to take it pretty much.
Oh yeah, my goal is, I mean, I know that, and I like to take my time with each language, so once I finally do get to the crust of Russian, I probably will start on Egyptian Arabic next. So if you wind up seeing me on Facebook posting in Arabic, you know, and it's funny too, because Ali said this in one of his podcasts, that he was like, I learned Egyptian Arabic, but it's not at the forefront of my brain. And so I do remember it, but that's one of the languages that sits in my head dormant.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, he's amazing. I love him to death.
Yeah.
Him and Steve Kaufman. I do have to say, I actually enjoy Steve Kaufman, and we became friends on Facebook. And I had sent him a message in Russian. He was like, "Your Russian is good. What? How long have you been?" And I'm like, "I almost 2 years." You know, but like I said, you have to have the heart. And if you have the heart and the passion and the motivation, you will succeed at whatever it is you want to do, whether it's speak languages, whether it's write books, whether it's whatever it is. And I tell people all the time, don't let, you know, people try to make you feel like this language environment's like one big competition to see who speaks the most languages or who writes the most books or who makes the most money. Because I did read your post about your course that you designed, which I think was pretty awesome. I was like, first of all, I don't even think I could do that. Oh my God.
Well, it was very hard.
and I sat there and I said to myself, I said, if he can do this, and I mean, I read your whole story and I can definitely relate to what you were going through on so many levels. And I said, oh, I know what that's like to lose things that, you know, are sentimental to you and people in your life. And yeah. And it's kind of funny because in this community, out of all the communities that I belong to, it's like the most opening.
Yeah.
And it's not discriminating. Now I will say there are some websites and there are some pages I've been on where I've had to like take myself out of them because it was just too much.
Sure.
And I mean, it was either the religious banter or I'm like, I'm a religious person, but not that religious. And I don't want to read this every day. Okay.
Yeah.
But I have to say, like, I've had people from the Middle East that has praised me on wanting to learn their stuff. I mean, I even like attempted a little bit of Hungarian, a little bit of Bulgarian, a little bit of Italian, some German, just to see, you know, I wanted to feel it to see if that would be another language or something. But I mean, everybody has been welcoming to me pretty much. And you know, everybody's like, the fact that you even wanted to learn Persian or teach it or learn it to, because I was supposed to teach someone Braille. However, they were from Afghanistan. They were totally blind and they were not educated in their mother tongue, let alone English.
Mm.
So when I met them at the end of November last year, they knew no English except ABC and maybe their number is supposedly to 100. Mm. They couldn't say hello. They couldn't say who my name is, where I'm from. Thank you. Nice to meet you. Your basic greetings. They couldn't say none of it. And they were taking English classes. And I said, it was nice to meet you and everything. And I told the educating coordinator, I said, I will not be able to do it. I'm sorry.
That's too
because if
basic.
if you can't even do basic, it's going to be, first of all, to learn Braille, you better be fluent in English.
Yeah.
Or whatever language you speak, because otherwise you're not going to be able to do the work.
Right.
And I didn't want my time wasted because I was going to be starting my course, which I finished in 7 weeks. And my counselor who paid for it was just completely blown away. I was like, well, you got to realize I'm someone that likes to learn. And if you like to learn, especially about new people and cultures and, you know, that, you know, you will thrive. So I said it only took me 11 weeks to finish the entire course, including the grammar portion. And yes, I'm a native English speaker, but the grammar portion, the site wasn't accessible. So the audio clips, I couldn't work when I clicked on them on my phone or my iPad, and they wouldn't play. They would come up, but they wouldn't play. No sound whatsoever. And so it took me and like two other people to be able to go through this 100 question test where 84 of the questions were grammar related, and 90% of this stuff you're not even going to use. And I was like, I don't need to know what a depositional verb is or that's adjective true. I know what a gerund is. I was like, oh my God, really? Do I need to know what a a phoneme is or a morpheme. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I was like, if I ever have to use this, and I have a professor that she pretty much adopted me into her family 17 years ago. She taught me English at Tri-C, and she said, Chanel, pass that test as high as you can get it. And just remember, you will never use any of this crap. Just understand that. You just won't.
Yeah.
And I just said, I mean, I took it 5 times. Failed it 4. Why? Because it was not accessible.
Right.
And then when I finally passed it with 86, I was so happy. Then I was like, okay, so can I get a copy of this sent to me? Oh, yeah, sure. You can get a copy for $115. Huh? So I called my counselor and said, I'm broke. I don't have any money. Can you pay for my paper copy, please? I got a B in the course. You should be so happy with because I'm actually certified to teach business English and young learners. So, which is a good thing. And actually over here, you can make between $25 to $30 an hour teaching ESL to people.
Yeah, that's great.
Which is, I didn't realize it was that, you know, marketable, but it is. And we're getting an influx of nothing but people from the Middle East, people from certain parts of Africa, people from Eastern Europe, you know, in sure. here. And it's, you know, I love it because I could go in the class, speak English, speak a little Arabic, speak some Russian, speak a little French, you know, and I mean, I have to say it's freeing to be able to communicate in another language aside from the English language. I guess because English is my first language is like, okay, this is boring. Can I speak something else? You know, because I look at it like this, I get to learn about someone else's history, someone else's culture, their traditions, where they come from. And just like Nelson Mandela said, you know, you know, if you speak someone else's language, you're speaking to their heart.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day. And so I look at it as, well, it's a gift. I think, you know, God blessed me with having a great ear to, you know, learn it. You know, orally. And I mean, literally, I would, if I were to learn Danish, it would be the same thing. Like I would go in my head and pretty much I and you and we, and I don't know if you guys have the same articles for like formal you and informal you, like,
yeah.
And oh, okay. Yeah. Cause we're American English and English in general. That's the only language I think so far that I've come across where we don't have that.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's just disappeared over time.
Right. And then I didn't realize we had a case system until I looked it up in a grammar book somewhere. I'm like, we have a case system in one? What? You know, I mean, because you don't think about it.
No, like, you just use it. Yeah.
Right. I mean, we didn't, and then it was like, oh yeah, we have the dative case and the nominative case and the accusative case. I'm like, we do? What, I mean, and like my English, oh yeah, we do. We don't recognize it in that classification anymore. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's funny too, because one of the last Russian post I posted, which is back in December, someone said, your Russian's gotten so good. What have you been doing? I was like, I've been listening since May.
Hey, everyone, we're almost done with today's episode, which I know you're very sad about. But before we do that, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Anthony Mativia's Memory Improvement Seminar. He's giving away 2 hours of mind-bending audio that will actually give you the secret to ultimate memory improvement. And you can find this exclusive 2-hour recording on actualfluency.com/secret and, you know, start improving your memory today. Thank you for sharing your incredible story and for the also for the all the encouragement and inspiration you've sent me over the years. And
oh, you're welcome. No problem.
I've really whenever I feel a little bit down, I always think, like, you know, just keep going, and you kind of unwavering optimism and positivity is really motivational for me, and I really appreciate it. So thank you for that.
No problem. I mean, trust me, I look at it like this. We're all in the same community and we should be supporting each other no matter what the situation is, because at the end of the day, there's nobody out there like us that is really doing this. I mean,
it's true.
Thank you for listening to the Actual Fluency Podcast.